Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to yet another very special edition of the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We are live in the Horseshoe, one of the great pubs of old London town, in the shadow of the Shard. I'm joined by Kevin O'Sullivan, my erstwhile hospitality partner. Deanna Davison is here, Tory MP for Bishop Auckland. We are ready, willing and able to drink 124 pints each in order to save the economy. However, we won't do it in the next 3 hours. We'll maybe do
six hours,
two or three. But it's going to be a great day. If you're in the hospitality business, you're going to be very happy. If you run a cinema, you're going to be pretty happy. If you're in the travel business, you might actually get some business today. There's lots to talk about. We've got a whole host of great guests, including Peter Hitchens coming along. Lee Anderson MP is going to be here. Maya Toosey, Ali Ross is going to talk about that dreadful TV show that was on last night, probably later on as well. We want to hear from all of you. We might not be taking your calls today, but we will be taking all your messages on Twitter, at Talk Radio, at IROMG, at TV Kev. And of course, you can email us, you can text us 87222. We are at the opening of the economy, the proper opening. It's not April the 12th. It's not when you can only have a few people sitting outside freezing in the rain, sitting there shivering in the snow. No, we're actually inside. Look at these beautiful leather armchairs. Somebody said it looks a bit like Tales from the Unexpected, which of course, if you're not that old, you won't remember. But there'll be plenty of unexpected tales. There'll be plenty of news. There'll be plenty of entertainment as well. This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We are the only radio station that takes the business of business seriously, because we are not frightened of the Indian variant. We're looking at it. We're taking our time to see whether it's going to do any damage. However, the bottom line is the economy needs fixing, and it needs fixing now. 0344 499 1000 is the number. We're live from the Horseshoe. This is the home of common sense. This is Talk Radio. Cheers.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, I'm delighted to say that our very first guest in our very first show inside a pub for the first time, I think since December, Deanna Davison, who was here with us down at the Houses of Parliament, just to show how versatile we all are. You know, one week we're sitting outside the mother of all democracies talking about the Queen's speech. Here we are today talking about lager shandies.
No, it's my preferred topic, to
Welcome.
Be honest, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for coming down. So, I mean, this is such an important day, though, isn't it? Not just for those people who want to be out and about with their friends and their families, hugging each other, you know, getting stuck in to a bit of proper socialising, but actually businesses as well.
Well, completely. As we know, the hospitality industry has had a really difficult year, with, you know, mostly closures or only able to open outside, which has kind of shut out some of the hospitality businesses. So today's a huge day, and I've already had word from a lot of my kind of businesses in Bishop Auckland about how excited they were to open today, and I can't wait to get up and see them at the weekend.
Absolutely right. How is Bishop Auckland at the moment? Because obviously different places have got different problems. We're hearing this morning, for example, that Bolton, all the hospitals there have cancelled all appointments and all various operations and things because of the COVID scare, because of the Indian variant. Nobody's quite sure really how bad this is. We keep hearing people are frightened about it, and we had Matt Hancock saying it spreads like wildfire. I don't even know what he means by that exactly, but what's the view in the rest of the country?
Well, I think the reason that there's a little bit of cause for concern is because it is more transmissible and it transmits much more quickly between people. So obviously we need to keep an eye on it and make sure it isn't going to spread like wildfire. But at the moment, you know, we aren't seeing a massive increase in hospitalizations, which is a really good thing. We certainly aren't seeing an increase in deaths, which again is a good thing. Yeah. And means we're able to move on to this stage of the roadmap today. But in Bishop Auckland, I mean, our case rates have been pretty low for a while. And frankly, people are just ready to get back to normal.
I think we're at the point that has always worried me, where We're talking about this Indian variant as if it's the bubonic plague. In fact, nobody's really dying from it.
Four
deaths from the Indian variant altogether. In Bolton, where they're talking about a total local lockdown, there are actually 18 cases of the coronavirus in the hospital, the Indian variant. So the Indian variant is not a killer because of the vaccine, and yet the government is acting as if it's now got to protect us from getting a little bit ill and then recovering.
Yeah.
We cannot shut down the country because of a bit of flu, basically, can we?
But I think this is the problem, Deanna, that we've now got a kind of two-tier society, haven't we? We've got all the people. Yes, of course people have suffered. People have lost relatives, loved ones, and nobody would diminish that. But when you see, for example, yesterday, some professor at Oxford University saying, oh, I think this would be a good year not to go on foreign holiday. You know, some people work very hard. The only thing they get is a reasonably cheap package holiday for them and their families to go to Spain for a week or so, or 10 days in the summer, and that's all they can get away from England to do. Mm-hmm. And for some, you know, quite frankly, you know, champagne socialist sort of, you know, millionaire to tell them all, oh, just stay at home. Why don't you just go and rent a mansion in Devon? Well, no, you can't do that. You know, I think it's really wrong that a lot of these scientists are trying to make out that they know better than everybody else.
Well, you know, I'm a conservative. I believe in personal responsibility. I think as long as we give people the facts and say, you know, you can go abroad, we're going to let you go abroad, but if there's a spike out there, you might get stuck there, you might not be able to come home. I think if we give people the facts, allow them to make their own decisions. I mean, that's firmly what I believe in, and certainly I can't wait to go on holiday.
Yeah.
Is there any way we can explain why the scientists of SAGE are warning that if we don't start locking down and taking restrictions again, by the summer there'll be 1,000 deaths a day? I thought that the vaccine worked.
Well, exactly. Well,
so how will there be 1,000 deaths?
Well, you know what was
interesting
over the weekend? There was two different narratives. There was that narrative where it said, you know, oh, we might have 1,000 deaths a day. And then there was the Matt Hancock narrative, which said, if you haven't been vaccinated, please get vaccinated. And you go, well, they can't both be right. You know, either you get the vaccine and you don't get sick, or you get the vaccine and you still get sick. Which one is it? You know, it can't be both.
Well, certainly all the kind of trials from the vaccine have showed it's very effective against all kind of known variants. The problem is unknown variants, new variants that might come. So it's right that our scientists do keep, you know, doing what they do and investigating those to make sure the vaccine will be effective. But certainly at the moment, we are encouraging as many people as possible to take up the vaccine as soon as it's offered to you.
Yeah.
Because what we're seeing from the scientific data is it does protect you.
Yeah. But I mean, for example, this week in schools, masks are off, basically. You don't have to wear them anymore. So apparently last week it was dangerous and you had to wear a mask. This week it's not. It's difficult to convince people, isn't it?
I mean, I think we've tried to justify it in terms of the different stages of the unlock, obviously, which has all been based on the data and the case rates and, you know, the kind of four tests that the government have set out. And so obviously, you know, if we're unlocking, we have to do that in step by step. But I see what you mean. It's a difficult one, Mike.
But it's as if the Sage and, to an extent, Boris and Matt are hanging on to this coronavirus crisis.
I think Boris has had enough of it.
For all their worth. Sage, when we do get out of lockdown, hopefully on June the 21st, when it's all free again, Sage will probably go into a period of grieving because they're no longer stars of the show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they won't be getting phoned by the BBC anymore.
Well, yeah,
can
yeah,
please come on and scare everyone.
Yeah, yeah, we're going to do 16 hours on the Indian variant today. Thank you, BBC. It's getting a bit weird now.
Yes, it really is. And that's the other thing, right? We're all sitting here preparing for a very big day. If you're in hospitality, I noticed, I think it was Nigel Evans put out a tweet last night about the Red Lion down in Westminster. Lights on last night because people working frantically to get ready. And you can't underestimate how important this is to people who have not been able to make a living. I mean, I was in a restaurant last week, and as we were sitting there, the guy, the owner, comes out having had a phone call from Kensington Council to take down all of his outside perspex, right? Otherwise, they were going to come shut him down. He was literally with a drill as we were trying to eat our spaghetti vongole. It was quite off-putting. And but we said, oh, don't worry about it. But, you know, the jobs worth around as well. The people who are going to turn up. Apparently, we've got 10,000 people who have been hired by the government to come around knocking on people's doors to see to make sure they're not going out after having come back from somewhere. I mean, it's not the world we want to live in. I was struck by being on the tube. I'm sorry to rant about this, but I was struck on the tube. I walked a different way to come here today. And you're walking down, and it's actually beginning to sound a bit like something out of the Replicant movie, you know, where they're saying, you know, please wear a face mask, please stay left, please wash your hands, you know, please don't go over there. And then the sound of, in the background again, if you see anything weird, you know, make sure you tell someone. I'm going, what sort of a world am I now living in?
Yeah, I think there is definitely, certainly on the tube, I've noticed it more than anything. You know, mind the guard, mind the closing doors. I mean, you know, you can understand wanting people to be safe, but at the same time, there's that certain bit of personal responsibility, as I was saying earlier on.
And all these people standing around in pink jackets now instead of high-vis yellow. It's high-vis pink. I presume that means something. I don't know what it means, but I was going to go up and ask them. I thought I'd probably get arrested for asking a question.
I think it is time for the government to stress to the people of this country that this vaccine is working. Because there seems to be a kind of prevarication going on, you know, that they don't quite say, look, the vaccine is the secret of our success. They kind of warn us it might not be. And I think that this government spent a hell of a lot of money scaring the living daylights out of the population because of the coronavirus crisis. I think they ought to spend the same amount of money now recalibrating the national mindset to tell all those people quivering behind their front doors to this day, it's time to stop all that. We've got to get back to normal.
Well, I think you're right, and there is such an appetite amongst the vast majority of society to get back to normal. Mm. And we've got, you know, one of the best vaccination programs and rollouts in the world. It's working. Yeah. You know, we've seen hospitalizations amongst like the over 50s drop dramatically, and that's only going to continue as we continue to roll this out. And there's kind of less community transmission. So I think you're exactly right.
I think, honest. And I think that's the mood of the nation overall.
Even in Bolton, where they've got it the worst, the people of Bolton are furious at the suggestion they might get a local lockdown. They've had a whole year because they never really came out of lockdown at all there, and they are sick to death of it, and they've got to get back to normal, and they want to. So if the people of Bolton want that, then you can rest assured the rest of the nation do too.
No, I think you're exactly
I think so.
Right.
Now, I have to say, on April the 12th, Kevin and I did the show from outside. It was 4 degrees when we started, right?
Snowing.
It was a bit of snow falling. It's much nicer to sit inside. You like our setup, by the way? We've got some darts over there. We've got some honey, which is actually made from bees on the roof of this pub.
Wow.
It's quite expensive, but, you know, we've got a tab going, we've got some lager shandies.
I know how many of you had to have a tab that size.
Well, the boss put 5k behind.
Well, what I was
going to
say was
last
time we rather foolishly got a bit carried away. We booked a place for dinner. So we spent all afternoon here, then went over to Kensington for dinner. What are you doing later in terms of supplying the economy with funds?
Well, I am actually taking my team out for a nice brunch later.
Very nice.
Which will be good. And then I'm out to a restaurant tonight and some drinks in between. So it's...
So you'll
there,
be in a pretty bad
work.
State later
there
on as well.
There is work
then.
And meetings in amongst that. But
well, isn't it great, though? I
mean,
I have to say, it's wonderful to see people, you know, be able to mingle properly again. It's been great in the past month when we've been outside. But, I mean, this past weekend was so awful that an awful lot of publicans couldn't even open.
Well, when we came here on April the 12th, we sort of drank... raised a glass to the poor pubs that couldn't open because they didn't have gardens or it wasn't going to be financially viable. And we should remember today there are 2,000 pubs all over the country that still can't open because even with the indoor restrictions, it's not enough for them to be able to function. They're not big enough. Mm-hmm. They don't have enough tables. They don't have enough space. 2,000 pubs still can't open. Mm. So let's remember, we are still in COVID restrictions.
Oh, for sure, because a lot of restaurants as well will tell you that, you know, they can't maximise their profits yet because they can't occupy every single table. And I'm not sure I want to go to the cinema yet if I have to sit, you know, three
the sort
rows
of films
away
they're
from
churning out
to be
these
fair
days,
I can't think of anything better at the cinema than sitting rows away from people crunching popcorn. But
but not watching Peter Rabbit, though. I'm not going for that. I think I'll wait for the Bond film to come out, possibly.
Well, that'll be in about 2025.
Yeah, absolutely right.
If we're lucky.
I know. Well, listen, Deanna, thanks for kicking us off. We've got a busy show today. We've got loads of people coming here to spend time with us. Appreciate you being the first guest in the first proper opening pub session. Deanna Davidson, Tory MP for Bishop Auckland, Kevin O'Sullivan is here. We've got lots to talk about, not least Martin Bashir and the whole BBC scandal that's going on, by the way. But we'll get to that later on. Ali Ross will be here. We've got lots to do. Keep your messages coming in. Loads of them are coming in already. Whatever you're up to, whatever you're doing, especially if you're going anywhere, if you're flying off somewhere, do let us know. This is the Home of Common Sense. Inside a pub, it's Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
I'm going to tell you something that that you may have forgotten about. The last time you and I were in the same room, it was in the old, Daily Express building, but the grey Lubyanka as opposed to the black one.
The one that's now been flattened.
The one that's now disappeared, incredibly. It wasn't up for very long. And Bill Clinton was still president. You were, I think, special correspondent or columnist or something. I was in conference with you. I was, I think, at the time, foreign editor or something like that. And it was that long ago. It was sometime in the sort of mid-90s.
So that building sort of disappeared along with all the Daily Express readers.
Well, indeed.
Don't be unkind.
That's a very harsh thing to say to a man who is still in the newspaper business.
Well, he's not at the Daily Express. He's in a very successful newspaper.
The fact that you and I have both been fired out of it and have had to find a suitable alternative employment in the radio business is a different matter altogether. But anyway, welcome. Good to see you.
It's very good to be here.
You're looking well. as you say, you don't fancy a drink today.
Well, I do fancy one, but I will not be told when I can start. I remember quite clearly the last time I went into a pub. And I went up to the bar and I bought a drink,
yes,
which I believe is still impossible.
Yeah.
And I don't really think that a thing like buying a drink at a pub is something you should listen to the government about. It's not for them to tell you when you can or when you can't do it. So I'll do it when I feel like it, not when they tell me.
Yes, no, it's interesting. I was walking today through London Bridge Station on a route that I don't normally use. And the number of signs struck me today for some reason. You know, don't do this, do that, walk here, don't walk there, wear a face covering, be kind, you know, wash your hands.
Breathe in, breathe out. There's a wonderful one I saw the other day at Reading Station, which was, take care while minding the gap.
It is, but
because you'll be so busy thinking about, shall I mind this gap this way or that way, that you forget to take care and you fall into the gap anyway.
Too busy reading the signs to see the train coming and then miss it, you know.
What did you do in the coronavirus war, Daddy? Well, we followed arrows in a pub.
But that's it. Then there was an announcement that came over, you know, the one where they go, what is it? Watch, sort.
Oh, no.
See it, sort it.
See it, sort it.
See it, sort it.
Which doesn't make any sense at all.
And I thought to myself, this is a bit like one of those science fiction films. So you're walking through a public building, somebody's announcing something at you, and everything you look at is a sign, and everyone walking towards you is wearing a mask. And I'm going, when did this all actually happen?
Well, it actually did happen. Mm. We are in the invasion of the body snatchers, or maybe in Minority Report, we're in another world. And we all happily walked into it. Well,
I know.
Most of us did. I didn't, but here we are. And most people are content with it.
Are we going to walk out of it similarly, though, do you think?
I see no reason to believe so. I think many people enjoy it, feel comforted and are made to feel safer by it. And they will accept a lot of this going on forever. I wonder whether we will ever, for instance, get rid of the face mask.
Well, this is interesting, isn't it? Because my children, my teenage children, have been told this week they don't need to wear one anymore, despite the fact that last week they had to wear one, and so much so that last week they were still trying to force them to wear them on Friday, but Monday it's fine.
Well, this is extraordinary. Mind you, school children never, ever should have been made to wear masks in the first place, and it's extraordinary that they got away with it. Mm. But you see it, the thing is, we've discussed this before, walk down the street, see how many people are wearing face coverings in the open air.
Yeah.
They've never been told to. The advice has never been to do so.
No.
And yet the numbers probably are increasing. And I think this is a sign that many people welcome this and enjoy the regimentation and the absence of initiative in return for a feeling of illusory but strong feeling of safety.
Yeah. My favourite was my favourite thing are the drivers in their own cars on their own. With a full face mask on. Yeah. And there was a picture in the papers the other day of a woman down in Bournemouth swimming in the sea 50 yards out on her own with a face mask on while swimming.
That's good. Yeah. I was walking in some woods yesterday and I sneezed. And a person about 100 yards away heard me sneeze and took a long detour around me.
Yeah. Because the trouble is...
Surrounded by cow pasture, you do sneeze.
Yeah, Julia Hartley-Brewer said this the other day, that the people who seem the most frightened of this are the people who seem to know the least about it, because we've all sort of become epidemiologists to some extent. Certainly, if you're in the media, you've been writing about it, talking about it for a year. But an awful lot of people are frightened by what they think could happen without actually knowing what will happen.
Well, an American friend of my wife recently wrote to her, she's come to live in a village in Hampshire. She said, what has happened? What has happened to education? Mm. What has happened to thought? There doesn't seem to be any understanding left of the scientific method of how to think, nor any understanding left of the idea that people are allowed to disagree politely and rationally.
Yeah.
It's gone completely. And she's completely baffled coming from outside, from a part of the United States where people do still think.
Yes.
That this
and
is going
and where
on.
Personal responsibility and freedom is actually still words that can be said.
Well, yes, you can still say them here, but the problem is that as soon as you try to apply them in practice, people say, where's your mask?
Mm. Peter, yesterday the Mail on Sunday had a fantastic leader, which sums up what I think a lot of people are thinking right now. The government keeps saying, we're going to tackle wokery, we're going to battle it face on, and we're going to get rid of it. They keep talking the talk, but they never walk the walk. Now, you wrote in your excellent column yesterday about the death of common sense. You know, we like to boast that talk radio is the home of common sense, and we still tell it like it is. And yet, around the country, wokery is destroying common sense. What is going on here? Will the government finally get to grips with this pernicious problem, do you think?
Well, I hope so, but I very much doubt it, because if you remember, the Conservative Party itself went through a politically correct revolution under David Cameron. It decided, under huge pressure, I have to say, from the Labour Party to do so, and also pressure from the BBC, which pretty much let it know, if you knuckle under to all this Blairism stuff, then we will once again treat you as a serious party. Until then, we'll just mock and jeer at you and treat you unfairly.
Yes.
That, I think, was the unspoken deal. It may have been spoken, for all I know. There were meetings, but that was the deal. And the Tory party went woke. Particularly under Theresa May, and but the whole attitude of the Tory Party towards all the sex, drugs, and rock and roll revolution which had been going on in New Labour for the previous 10 or 15 years was turned over by David Cameron, who went to his party's conferences and more or less said to them, "I hate you," and these are the things I'm going to do, which are going to annoy you. Tough. I'm leader now, and you'll have to put up with it. And they did, and they have. So I don't know where the Tory party is going to find the knowledge, understanding, or resolve. My problem is this. I am a former Marxist revolutionary, so I understand how Marxist revolutionaries think and work, and I understand what's happened. And I look around, and I try to explain to people this huge, long march through the institutions of all the people who I was at university with in the late 60s, early 70s, has now reached a point where every single institution in the country is controlled by the new thinking. And this instance of the private school chaplain who's now in deep trouble for actually making what seems to me to be an entirely rational, tolerant sermon is an example of this. And when the Mail on Sunday approached the Archbishop of Canterbury, "So are you going to support this guy?" The words which came back were the immortal and lyrical words which you might expect from someone in the Church of England: "No comment."
Yes,
no comment.
He was too busy ticking a box which said you have to get rid of all these statues up and down the church.
Yeah, he's much too busy getting rid of statues of people who might conceivably be involved in slavery.
I mean, what is that about? The thing is that the church has had a torrid time for the past year because it has been unable really to issue pastoral care to its various congregations. It has been unable to communicate with the people. Now we're coming out of lockdown. It's the Church of England's big chance. What does the Archbishop of Canterbury say? Don't worry about your congregations. Take a clipboard, go out into your graveyards and have a look at your artifacts and your stained glass windows and check whether or not there are any connections with slavery. What on earth is he thinking?
This is what you must understand. Every institution that you thought was sensible, which had common sense in it, which had experienced people in it who understood what the world was really like, when you actually come up against them on any issue like this, on any of these clipboard issues, you find very rapidly that the person you previously thought was sensible and looks just like a normal human being talks to you as if he was in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, as if his mind or her mind has been taken over.
Yeah.
And everybody knows that they have to behave in accordance with this. If you apply for a job, you put in your pronouns.
Yes.
Now, because if you don't, then people might say, well, we're not going to employ this person.
Yeah, because you're obviously transphobic.
You have to assume it. And the idea that people have that, say, for instance, big business is conservative, or the church is conservative, or private schools are conservative, or the police are conservative, or the courts are conservative, or the civil service is conservative, it's not true. Every single one of these has now been taken over by people like me.
Yeah.
Only the difference between them and me is I grew up, and they didn't. They're still, they don't bother with the old slogans of the 1960s anymore.
No.
They've moved on. But they are still basically revolutionaries.
And
they've also started the world over again.
But they've turned their back on the masses. And Dan Hodges actually wrote what I thought was quite an interesting column this weekend, in which he said it's not that Keir Starmer and the Labour Party don't understand their voters in the North. It's that they don't want to listen to them. They don't like what they've got to say. They don't really like them at all. They don't certainly don't like what they believe in.
Well, most party leaders hate their voters, but they. we remember the
they wish they didn't have to deal with
the Gillian Duffy episode.
Yes,
the famous occasion when
that bigoted woman
Gordon Brown talked to one of his voters, and actually, I think she voted Labour in that election after he'd publicly insulted her. But I think she's since, if you check out, she definitely voted to leave the European Union.
Yeah.
And I suspect that the Gillian Duffy episode, which had no immediate effect, was actually a starting point when a lot of Labour voters realised that they were actually being led by people who despised them.
Yeah.
The fascinating thing is that Tory voters don't seem to have cottoned on yet, that their leaders despised them too.
No, and in fact, I think it's right to say that the Tories probably deep down now have become, as you say, just as woke as Labour were. Under Cameron, you couldn't tell the difference between Cameron and Blair to me.
Well, that was the whole idea.
The same guy.
Cameron denied it over and over again, but he did call himself the heir to Blair at a private dinner with journalists, and he actually did do it, and he meant it. And George Osborne referred to Blair as the master.
Yeah.
They were completely in awe of this. They admired every aspect of it, and they copied it.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Because also, listening and reading your column at the weekend, talking about the whole Palestinian thing, you know, Kevin and I were talking about this before, that an awful lot of people in this country are not very interested in Israel versus Palestine. You know, the lefties are. You know, Jeremy Corbyn was out marching with his Palestinian flag. And again, people are saying now that actually they care more, the Labour Party, about people in the Gaza Strip than they do about people in Hartlepool.
They're obsessed.
And you made an interesting point that a friend of yours says something similar about the Middle East.
Well, the problem with the Middle East is that it's a great place to exercise your conscience in somebody else's country.
Yeah.
And the less you know about it, the easier that is to do. I've had the great good fortune to go to that part of the world many times, including Gaza and the West Bank. And Israel, I've talked to, particularly to the Israeli Arabs, that fascinating minority who are undoubtedly mistreated, but on the other hand are probably much better treated and have more rights than any other Arabs anywhere else in the region, which is a bizarre paradox, if you like. And my friend, who's an Arab Israeli there, said to me after driving me up to Ramallah through huge numbers of barricades and checkpoints, he said, "Oh, for the good old days before we had peace." Because all these attempts by well-meaning Western people showing off their consciences from
clearly Bill Clinton, Tony Blair, of course.
Well, Blair a bit, Clinton particularly badly, and of course the Oslo attempt, which Clinton got Rabin and Arafat to shake hands on the White House lawn, a ridiculous occasion at which I was present. These things did not actually improve the conditions of Arab men, women and children in the region. And if you really care about that, then and I think people should, because they really do need help, support. And the last thing you want is another round of political negotiations.
Yeah. Another round of political leaders trying to make a name for themselves and get themselves the Nobel Peace Prize, which by now surely has been ridiculously kind of
Palestinians of East Jerusalem who got sort of occupied, they apparently often say, well, it's not great, but ever since the Israelis occupied us, we've been getting our dustbins collected all the time. So there are sort of useful bureaucratic.
I don't get carried away on that. I think that was a particular bit of Jerusalem where Israeli settlers started to move in and the dustbins started moving. There is, I mean, there's no doubt there is discrimination, and particularly over water.
Yeah.
And over land, and Israel is not a perfect country, but then it is by no means the only perfect country in the world.
But of course, in the background to all of this, recently, and this is apparently one of the reasons why people who support Palestine are now even more upset than they were a year ago, is that Israel have done a deal with the UAE. Saudis are quite happy to help them out because they don't like Iran very much, and it's all a very complicated picture, which can't really be explained by somebody with a loudspeaker shouting "Free Palestine" outside the Israeli embassy.
No, it can't. And I just wish that I could communicate to more people the experiences I've had in that part of the world and the complexity of it, but also very much the enormous ability to show goodwill among the ordinary people on both sides, which is blocked by political leaderships who wish to grandstand and make... And remember, in this case, the Palestinian supposed parliament has not had an election for years. They've repeatedly postponed.
Yeah.
And Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, is unable, after election after election after election, to assemble a majority in the Israeli Parliament. And this may have a lot to do with the mess that we're in at the moment, rather than the problems of the people.
What is the root of Labour's obsession with Palestine? Today, Keir Starmer on his Twitter thread is posing in front of a Palestinian flag, obviously connecting with the British voters on that issue. But what,
I think
what,
he
what,
always has. I don't think it's just
but
today.
Why are they so obsessed?
I don't think anyone particularly knew about this.
But
I
mean, why are they so obsessed?
Britain has had a particular role in this. I mean, Britain was the country which effectively set up Israel by establishing a national home for the Jews in 1917. And we are deeply involved in this, and so it comes into our politics all the time. The astonishing thing is that having done that, Britain then spent most of the next 40 years trying to get out of the promise that it had made. And it's never been, it's always been a source of deep controversy in British politics, and it's not exclusively the Labour Party that has taken that side. And conservative governments have very often taken the Arab side in that particular quarrel. Mm.
And what happens next with the Tory party, though? Because we've been seeing stories being written, I suppose, all weekend and probably before that, that the Tories' lead is now apparently unassailable over Labour. Labour can't really get back into a two-party system, particularly. We see Scotland basically going rogue against the Home Office last week when two illegal migrants were stopped from being arrested by the Home Office, and the Scottish government came out and said, well, of course, we don't appreciate this hostile environment that's coming from England. More or less. I mean, you know, we're in not a very good place.
Well, this
here.
Is a huge part of it. Will there be a United Kingdom 15 years from now?
Yeah.
Will Scotland still be part of the same country? Will Northern Ireland be part of the same country? And when that happens, how long will it be before the issue of Welsh independence comes up? And these things have huge implications for Westminster politics. But the other thing is, how long can the Tories, if they don't do something about overcoming the woke revolution, how long can the Tories hold on to the votes that they've got from people who are sick of Labour for being taken over by wokery? When they discover what the Tories are really like, are they going to say, are we going to go back to Labour? No, I don't think so.
No. I personally think Labour are not going anywhere. I think Labour are done.
I think Labour may well be, and their equivalent party in Germany has been, replaced by the Greens.
Yes.
I think that may be the future, especially once Scotland is gone, because without the hope of regaining their seats in Scotland, I don't see how they can really hope to get a majority again, unless there's some utterly unpredictable cataclysm that we can't even begin to see.
No, quite. Well, Peter, great to see you. Thank you very much
Likewise.
For stopping by. And I don't know whether to ask you if you're going to be celebrating later your newfound freedom, or whether you're just going to ignore the
I
fact
don't
that
think
they're
I, honestly,
back
I don't
to
think
you.
I have anything to celebrate. I think that my cause has effectively lost. I feel like someone who belonged to a party that lost an election, although it had a very good set of policies. Now those of us who were against all this hysteria and misunderstanding have to try and make sure the truth gets told so it doesn't happen again. Mm. It's a much, much more difficult task than you might think. I don't know how we're going to do it. So I really have nothing to celebrate, but it's just a very nice pub. I plan to be back.
We'll come back
as soon as I can actually walk up to the bar and pay for a drink with money.
With you. Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
I see. I feel your pain. I think a lot of people do. But we're here. Actually, we've got a tab running, so we're not paying for the drinks at all. And somebody's paying for them. But
there's no such thing as a free drink.
No, that's absolutely right. Absolutely right. I am, of course, in the words of George Galloway, when he used to say, you never mind bribing British politicians or newspaper men, because they'll do terrible things without even being offered anything.
Thank God you cannot bribe or twist the honest British journalists. But seeing what the man will do unbribed, there's no occasion.
There you go.
Exactly right. He's got a much better memory.
That's
than
the
me.
One.
Well done. Peter Hitchens for the Mail on Sunday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the home of common sense. Welcome back to Talk Radio. Welcome back to the pub, because, of course, all of those three things have been conflated into one. As we sit here in the Horseshoe, Kevin O'Sullivan is here with me all the way through till 1 o'clock. We're celebrating the reopening of the inside of the pubs. We started with the outside on April the 12th. We froze ourselves to death a couple of times, but we did our duty. Now I'm delighted to say we're joined by two stalwarts of the show. Lee Anderson, who is, of course, a new Conservative MP. Seems mad to say that, because you look as if you've been doing it all your life, quite frankly, for Ashfield. And, of course, Baroness Kate Hoey. I'm never quite sure if I can... I'm supposed to say Baroness Hoey, aren't I? Or Kate.
You can call me anything.
Well, thank you very much indeed. Do you remember how they got upset with old Meghan Markle, because she doesn't seem to know how to call herself? You know, she's either Meghan Duchess of Sussex, or Duchess of Netflix, as I like to call her, or the Duchess. But she calls herself Meghan the Duchess of Sussex, which is entirely wrong.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know why she needs a title, because she obviously hates the royal family.
She does.
I don't know why she wants her title.
We'll come back to them. Come back to them later on. Lee wants to talk to us about a particular variant that you want to bring up with us. That you're worried about.
Yeah, this new variant. Well, I say it's a new variant, Mark. It's been around for 2 or 3 years. It's called the Islington variant. It seems to be affecting Labour politicians,
yes,
who spend most of the time on Twitter.
Yeah.
Or reading The Guardian,
yeah,
and it's spread like wildfire.
It does spread
in the
like
north
wildfire.
And in the Midlands. But the good news is, there is a cure.
Yeah.
It's for ex-Labour MPs, it's 5 years in isolation.
Right.
For ex-Labour councillors, lost his seats 2 weeks ago, it's another 4 years in isolation.
Yeah.
But for the Islington one, there's no cure at all.
There is no cure. Funnily enough, we've been talking about how many times he's been in isolation, because he seems to have been hiding away for a long time. But even his own party now want him to go into isolation. Kate, yeah, you were once a member of a very proud Labour Party, which seems to have lost its way completely, doesn't it?
Well, Brexit was the real turning point, although before that I think we had begun to lose our contact with real people, as
yeah,
I used to call it. But, the recent elections have been... a really very, very bad result. And the sad thing is, because I'm no longer in the Labour Party, but the sad thing is that they don't seem to be learning anything.
No.
I mean, yes, of course, they're going to have all these policy decisions and look at things and reflect and decide what made people not vote for them. But, you know, for most people, it's very simple. You could decide overnight what went wrong, and what went wrong was they had completely lost their touch. That Islington factor is a sort of London metropolitan factor, and they weren't interested really in the issues that the average person going out to work every morning is interested in.
No.
These Labour leaders, they always have this moment where they have near-life experiences where they actually accidentally clash with a member of the public. So we had Gordon Brown on the lead-up to that election clashing with that lady that he dismissed as
Gillian,
a racist.
Yeah.
And then we had Keir Starmer in the recent campaign going down to Bath, going down to that pub and clashing with the Labour voting landlord. And they always seem completely bemused by members of the public. They have no point of contact with them. What is it about Labour leaders and indeed Labour politicians?
Well, I'll tell you what it is, Kevin. They're out of touch with Labour voters. And I've always said this, the Labour leadership, the Labour MPs, the Labour activists, the Labour membership have nothing in common with your average Labour voter. You know, I see they're doing a bit of a review at the moment to see why people's left them.
You
come
know.
On, you should have done that, you know, well, 3 or 4 years ago.
They do that before the election, so you find out.
But by the way, there's a new term for the average Labour voter, Tory voter.
Well, in my area, they call them stupid. They call them stupid in my area, and that's one of the many reasons they're really going to struggle to get these voters back.
Yeah. You see, for years, there was a loyalty amongst Labour voters that they didn't really question anything, and they just simply voted Labour. And then once that changed, because those people were very different from the people running the Labour Party, both locally and nationally, and the kind of councillors that got elected. And, you know, now, once people have made that switch, it's sometimes, I think it's very, very difficult for them to come back unless there is a total change in the Labour Party. And
I was saying to Peter Hitchens, Dan Hodges' column this week, I don't know if you read it, where he talks about how it's not that they don't understand the voters in the north of England anymore, it's the fact that they don't want to listen to what
they don't want to hear
what they're saying, because they don't agree with them, because they don't talk about trans rights every 5 minutes, they don't talk about, you know, whether or not we should rejoin the European Union, they don't talk about, you know, whether or not you should announce ladies and gentlemen on a train and whether somebody should be arrested for that. You know, they're interested in having a job, and also I think the Labour Party far as you also think that everyone in the north of England has somehow got a cloth cap and a whippet.
Yeah.
It's almost like they have no clue and they've got no money. And so we must give them all money. Well, I mean, Hartlepool is actually quite a respectably well-to-do constituency, isn't it?
Well, look at Hartlepool. It's a great example, Mike. You know, you've got a 70% Leave area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, traditional Labour heartlands. What did the Labour Party go and do?
Yep.
They picked the worst possible candidate you possibly could for that seat and stuck him there and basically stuck two fingers up to the electorate.
And they thought because he was a doctor that somebody would go, oh, he's in the NHS, we better vote for him then because they're all heroes, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the other thing, I've said it before, but because the Conservatives got people like Lee and others in those so-called red wall seats, they're not the same kind of Conservative, if you don't mind
That's
me
right.
saying so, than what people had thought Conservatives were. And because they're coming from the backgrounds and from understand and are in touch, they're much more likely to keep the pressure up on Boris on all this stuff about equaling up and getting, isn't that
I
right?
think you nailed it there, Baroness. Okay. You look at areas like mine.
So I told you he was a Tory.
I'm going to doff my cap. In areas like Ashfield and Mansfield and Bowles and Don Valley and Roller Valley and all these places, they've all got new MPs. With a local accent, come from a completely different background to the Tory MPs in the south of the country. Nothing wrong with that at all. And actually, we're connecting with the public for the first time in donkey's years, and our public love that.
Yes, I think that's right. Because, I mean, if everybody remembers back to the days of Margaret Thatcher, I mean, her winning sort of formula was not about getting people who were posh Tories to vote for her. It was getting ordinary people, men and women, who had ordinary jobs, but who were aspirational, who wanted to have a nice car, wanted to be able to buy a house, wanted to be able to have a decent life for their families. And that's what you guys represent, isn't it?
Well, it's true, and it's funny that the aspirational socialists, if you like, Mike, are normally the Labour MPs, the bourgeoisie, you know, the metropolitan elite.
Right.
It's all right for them to have nice things, go to private school, have private education, all this sort of thing. But for us, the voting fodder in the north and in the Midlands, you just do as you're told. You know, you can stay in poverty for as long as you want, but keep voting Labour.
Is there a danger, though, that the Tories lose the vote that they have up there if it's not kind of something that they pay attention to, if you like?
The working class voters in areas like Ashfield are incredibly loyal, and they've shown that to the Labour Party for the last 50 or 60 years. If we listen to them and we deliver on our promises we made during the election, we've got Brexit done, we're getting COVID done, if we invest in the infrastructure projects that we've promised over the next 4 or 5 years, then they will be loyal to us. That's all we've got to do, Mark, is deliver.
If you deliver the basics, which I would say, if people are promised that they can keep a roof over their heads, they can put food on their kids' table, have a car in the drive, go to Spain on holiday once a year, they'll vote for you. And the Labour don't seem to understand that.
They don't understand that. And you're absolutely right. Typical working class Labour, ex-Labour voters are just working class people who do difficult, hard jobs that all they want to do is put a meal on the table, keep a roof up there, like you say, Kevin. Mm. Maybe go to Skegness once a year in a caravan.
They'll have to this year.
They're not some rabid left-wing lunatic
who wants
to bring governments down.
Isn't it also about loving your country and patriotism
absolutely.
As well? Because, you know, That is, and even still, you know, even in the last few weeks, we've seen examples of Labour people just, you feeling all the time that they just want to, I mean, I understand you want to oppose things in that the government's doing, but it's not even that, it's just general feeling that they don't believe in the United Kingdom, that they don't actually want
it
to be successful.
Well, do you know, I think it was a masterstroke of Boris Johnson to send two gunboats to Jersey on election day. I mean, you can't imagine Theresa May doing that, can you?
Just fancy that.
But it was just fantastic.
Just happened to be.
But also, wasn't it interesting, though, how many people from, say, the Remain side or the Labour side were sort of squeamish about it, like, you know, this is how you start a war, you know, why are we taking on the French? Well, because the French threatened to stop electricity being supplied to a sovereign part of Britain. That's why.
Yeah.
And so, you know, of course they side with the French and the EU. And you're kind of going, why would you do that?
Yeah, and I think that's why they're going to have to be tougher too. And I know there's some legislation coming through, which I haven't looked at in detail, about people coming across in boats from France. Because, you know, when we're stopping people going on holiday and coming in and all of that, and then you see literally every day now people coming, still
coming
in.
Well, there's 3,000 so far, according to Nigel Farage, who's always been on top of this story. And Priti Patel, I'm afraid, talks a good game, but she's not doing anything really about it because she can't. There's nothing that we apparently can do to stop it.
Well, apparently we have to get France's agreement to send them back.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think what happens is... And it does sound really callous, but they come here and then, you know, they're treated extremely well, understandably perhaps. But, you know, there's no... And that gets back that, well, look, it's very, very hard wherever you are, but if you make it to England, you know, life's going to be great.
Well, this is the other thing about the left is they tell us all the time it's institutionally racist here, it's horrible.
But you see, that's
people.
Not. Yeah.
But why do people want to come here then from all sorts of countries, including France, including Belgium, including Spain, Italy, Greece? They can stay in all of those places, but they don't want to because Britain's more welcoming.
Well, the last time I looked, Mark, there's no war in France. It's not war torn. People aren't being persecuted like they are, you know, in some countries. It's an incredibly dangerous journey coming across the channel. Are these people coming over the channel?
It would have been yesterday. I was down on the coast yesterday. It was very rough.
They think the streets are paved with gold. Mm. There's a lot being taken advantage of by people, traffickers.
Yeah.
And you know my view on this situation. I've been as vocal as any MP.
And you've been
Parliament.
In touch with Priti Patel, and you've been part of a group of MPs trying to make sense of it all.
And the Common Sense group, you know, it's about 50 Tory MPs, a few Lords thrown in there for good measure as well. And we've really been putting pressure on. The good news is, you know, we've got new legislation coming. In this session,
right?
There's a problem. Will that stop though, you're talking about the sovereign borders bill. There's a problem with that. I mean, it sounds good. You know, Priti wants to be able to send back asylum seekers if they're illegal or if their applications are not valid. That's good. But the trouble is, it requires the cooperation of the nations of the EU. All 27 nations have refused to cooperate.
Yeah.
So it's going nowhere. Isn't
well,
it?
I don't know. I mean, there was. People were saying a few months back that we're looking at getting an island to send the illegal travellers onto. You know, I'd back that straight away. You know, stop that draw.
What island?
The Ascension Islands. Let's try that. That's far away. Well, they won't be getting on a dinghy from there, will they?
I mean, people laugh at that, but that's what Australia did, didn't they? I mean, they just...
But this is it. And again, you know, there are people... I mean, Peter Hitchens was saying this. The trouble is with the Tory party, part of the Tory party is a little bit on the woke side, and they're terrified of being accused of doing anything, you know, nasty, because they don't want to be the nasty party. And I think sometimes they just have to be a bit more firm.
I think it's a question of efficiency. What Australia did, yes, geographically they had this handy island, they could put them all in, but the main thing they did is they said, we are going to process your applications for asylum in 3 weeks.
And then
in 3 weeks. Yeah. And the fact that you tried to get it into this country illegally immediately renders your application invalid. So what we have to do, I would suggest, Lee, I don't know what you think, is and Baroness Hui, of course, get the same system going. Process these people in 3 weeks. Why does it have to take 2 years?
Oh, how about 10 years? Well, the situation in Glasgow.
I mean, the Home Office is still a real mess, and every party and every Home Secretary comes in and says they're going to sort it, and it doesn't happen.
It never happens. But there's a real will now. We've seen with the new Red Wall MPs. This doesn't sit well in areas like Ashfield and all these northern seats we've got. And we're getting pressure. I mean, I'm a landlocked constituency, and I'm getting loads of pressure, more pressure than some of these southern seats.
Yeah.
And we've got the Common Sense Group now. We're meeting with the Home Secretary and the Immigration Department all the time, putting pressure on. So we're making some real noises.
Good.
And they're going to listen to us. If they don't listen to us, then we're going to struggle, you know, at the ballot box.
I think that's right.
And the other very good thing one of the best things in the speech was something I've pushed for ages, was to get... Probably some of you won't agree with ID for voting.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't understand
why people are so against showing ID. And it's like this nonsense where people go, oh, there's millions of people that don't have any ID. But really? Well, I don't know anyone.
Yeah, but anyway, in Northern Ireland, where it is taken for granted now, if you haven't got a passport or a driving license or something, you go to your local authority and they give you a card with your photograph on it, and that's it.
Right.
In order to be able to vote. Yeah.
Well, so if they're doing it in Northern Ireland, why can't we do
it? Well, exactly. And also, it was a Labour government brought it in Northern Ireland. So, you know, and then, you know, there was this thing that was in the paper the other day about, I think, to get into an annual meeting of one of the Labour Party local branches, you had to show a photograph.
That's
ID.
Right. Yeah, Momentum had a meeting to discuss voter ID, but you had to have an ID to get into the meeting.
Or if you go to a Labour Party conference, you've got to have a photo ID. It's absolute nonsense. I don't know what they're scared of, to be honest with you.
No, I don't. Finally, Baroness Hurry, tell us about what's going on in Northern Ireland. I was glad to hear John Redwood talking at the weekend, saying basically blaming the EU for the problems that they're having, because it's about shipments of stuff coming into Northern Ireland, which isn't going anywhere else. Well, so why would they be worried about it going into the Republic?
Well, Northern Ireland now has got more EU checks on goods than the total checks on the whole of the rest of the EU. It's just ludicrous what's happening. And it's you know, still affecting things like, if you want to go on holiday now to Northern Ireland, take your dog, you have to do all that bureaucracy, get a rabies injection. There hasn't been a rabies in the United Kingdom and Republic of Ireland.
What, if you're going from Northern Ireland to, say, Stranraer, needs a rabies injection?
Yes, and both, both ways. You know, you're going to have to do that. There's all sorts of little things. But the David Frost, without doubt, has picked up. He visited Northern Ireland last week and he met lots of people, and I think he's picked up the anger. Every single evening now, somewhere in Northern Ireland, there's small protests, demonstrations with bands mainly. You know, good. No violence, so they don't get coverage. And that is happening. And I think the pressure is on now because they know that the pro-union community is really fed up and angry. And, of course, we're coming into the what's called the marching season.
Yes.
And that is not going to, you know, that's going to give people an opportunity to protest even more. And ultimately, for me, it's not, even if there wasn't a single check, it's, for me, the constitutional position, which we had our first day in court on Friday in the High Court in Belfast. Mm. Went very, very well. We'll probably end up in the Supreme Court. But constitutionally, Northern Ireland, the Belfast Agreement has been definitely broken because of the north, this east-west stuff, which is a no consent, and also the Act of Union. So, you know, the government's got itself into a mess on this. Understandably, they wanted to get Brexit done. Northern Ireland's been left behind. It's not sustainable, and I'm very pleased to see more and more people are saying that.
Good. Finally, Lee, the next stage after this for me is getting people back into the buildings that are supposed to be occupied by office workers. When do you think we're going to start seeing that kind of movement?
About the same time as the MPs go back into the House of Commons.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, I've been in this morning,
send
actually.
Send a signal.
It's ridiculous,
For the first time in about 6 or 7 months, I actually saw cutlery. Steel cutlery being used at the breakfast table. You know, it's been more chairs there.
Tiny
more
steps.
Chairs, more chairs in the interior. We need to get more MPs back in the chamber. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know,
sends a bad message, doesn't it?
It was terrible. You know, you look at those green benches, they're half empty, and we're all huddled outside trying to get in there, waiting our turn to come in. We've got to send a clear message out to the British public. That is, we need to get back to work so you can get back to work.
Yeah. I'm afraid in the Lords there's a lot of people who'd quite like to keep Zooming because they can do it from the comfort of their deck chair.
Yes.
In the United Kingdom,
yes,
of course. I'm not suggesting they're in the Bahamas or anything.
That would be wrong, That would be entirely wrong to suggest that. Couldn't be happening at all. Absolutely ridiculous. Listen, great to see both of you. Thank you so much. Lee Anderson, Baroness Kate Hurry.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio. The Drop Zone on Talk Radio with bonus drop from William Hill Vegas. Play for free. Your chance to win instant free spins, bonuses and up to £1,000 a day in cash. Visit williamhill.com. 18 plus begambleaware.org.
Time for the Drop Zone with William Hill. I often said that I'm the greatest debater of all time, so the production team have come up with the three unlikely arguments that I would never make. I'm going to drop the coin to see which of these arguments I'll have to make. Today's topics include how 1 in 5 men think they could beat a chimpanzee and why I think I could beat one too. How about this one? How experts say feel-good films like Love Actually and Pretty Woman make us happy and how we should watch one every day. And finally, how sausage is the least liked pet name and how we should forget love or darling and use sausage as a term of endearment. Goodness gracious me. Let's see where we land to see which argument I'll have to make. Fortunately, it's not the sausage one or indeed the chimpanzee one. So I'm sorry to disappoint anyone who thought I was going to make that. I'm going to make the argument that actually watching feel-good movies is good for you. Because Love Actually is not a movie that I like very much, but when I do watch it, I always feel very warm and fuzzy afterwards. It's such a nice film to watch. Pretty Woman, even though it's about, you know, something rather sordid, makes you feel all warm and fuzzy inside, doesn't it? You know, before he hands over the cheque. But in the end, you know, it's not very nice to watch movies which have bad endings, which are woke, which are too nasty and horrible and full of violence, when you could watch a lovely, beautiful love story to lift your spirits in these difficult times. That was today's The Drop Zone with William Hill Vegas. Play for your free daily chance to win instant free spins, bonuses and up to £1,000 a day in cash. Visit williamhill.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
The Drop Zone on Talk Radio with bonus drop from William Hill Vegas. Get all the excitement of Vegas. Visit williamhill.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
Now, some might say we've saved the best for last, but I wouldn't be
Others
one of
wouldn't.
Them. I wouldn't be one of them. Certainly, Kevin won't be one of them. Dawn Neeson, your nemesis and frequent punch. Yeah,
I've really
punch
enjoyed.
Bag.
I've really enjoyed Plank of the Week since Dawn and I haven't had to do it together.
Well, don't worry, there will come a time when you're both together. Ali Ross is also here from The Sun. Welcome, Ali. You were here on April the 12th. We felt only right that you should come back now that we can sit inside and not actually freeze to death. So
just assumed you were here every day of the week anyway.
Well, you know, they are not actually not far off.
It's all the updates I ever get. We're in the horseshoe point.
We don't always do shows from here, but we probably are here. More than we're not here. Anyway, very nice to see both of you. Are you planning on pushing the boat out for the rest of the day, and are you going to be booking a place to go for dinner later? What are you doing?
No, that sounds a dreadful idea.
Does it? It probably isn't going to be
People.
A great night to go out. You're not going to be one of those sort of, you know, middle class types that go, I don't like people very much.
No, I went to the pub on Friday and it's now 2 days from hangover at minimum, so I'm
He's still suffering.
Yeah.
Well, I can understand that. Dawn, of course, is a woman who looks after herself very well. She goes cycling quite a lot.
Well, actually, yeah, I started my day because it's not just pubs and restaurants that are open today, that group exercises and gyms are open. And as much as
they've
pubs,
opened up the saunas, haven't they?
That is good news.
Evidently, no. And seriously, it is very, very good. So I was down in.
But what can you do today that you couldn't do yesterday?
For Cycle London, it's a spin class. It's a group spin class.
Right.
So you're in a darkened room on a bike, loud music, absolutely
Sounds
brilliant.
Awful.
So good, so good, really? So good to be back. Yeah. Really happy to be back. And yeah, I have a very hot date tonight. I'm actually broadcasting live from a restaurant with Mr. Mark Dolan later on Talk Radio.
Very
again.
Nice.
So
Excellent.
Exactly.
Which restaurant is it? So we can avoid it.
Which greasy spoon? Are you going to?
Nando's.
It's the lovely seafood restaurant, Smith's of Wapping.
Oh, very nice.
Right on the
That's one of your locals.
It is one of my
locals.
That
one, so you don't have to walk very far.
No, exactly. Stagger very far, Mike. Mm. And obviously doing my utmost to support the hospitality industry.
Absolutely.
Which is so important.
We must all do it. And I'm sure, Ali, when you recover from the hangover, you'll do the same, won't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah. No, I have missed it. Mm. The whole vibe.
I think so. Well, sitting here is just nice, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's not that it wasn't nice outside in the sun, but this weekend, I mean, it didn't stop raining. Every time I went out, took the dog out, started raining. You know, went back in, went out again to do something else, started raining. It's just been horrible weather. It's just been really cold,
I remember
nasty.
Our April the 12th show, Ali very kindly came down, and we were standing in the garden having a drink, you know, a glass of wine, chatting
afterwards.
After the show. And I remember I was like shivering like a kid.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it really...
It's fun for about
freezing.
12
yeah.
minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then...
So this is a good day. We're back inside. Yeah.
No, and the irony is it's actually quite nice out at the moment. We've got blue skies and sunshine, so it is quite nice. But it is just so important, not obviously for the industry itself, but for people's mental health. I mean, the pub is about more than drinking.
It really
is. It's about seeing your friends, being with your loved ones, having a good time, which is so important for
and
us.
And how many people have you hugged today? Because obviously you can now hug people if you wish.
Well, following the government guidelines...
My usual.
Which
zero.
You are very Scottish, though.
What about those of us who don't ever want to hug anyone ever?
But this is the madness, isn't it? I mean, the fact that our government is issuing guidelines on how to hug people.
Sideways.
Yeah. It is, like,
it is
insane.
Sideways.
I mean, how did we get
to this
situation?
To be fair, I think Boris Johnson needs guidance on how not to hug people,
Well, quite, yes,
you know,
indeed.
Look how that all works out all the time.
I'm liking this idea of going to the pub for the benefit of your mental health, though.
Yes. Yeah, listen, you can sell anybody on
get
the mental
your
health
nut,
thing.
It'll be so good for you.
I've had six pints. I've got no more problems.
Just wafted
Listen,
away.
Can we get both of your thoughts on what I think is a major story? The BBC is unravelling over this Martin Bashir situation. Mm-hmm. We won't be able to watch Panorama tonight, where Panorama was investigating itself.
I'm really disappointed
about Bashir's shenanigans way back when the 25-year-ago interview with Princess Diana. Lord Dyson's report comes out later in the week, which is an independent review of the situation, far more independent, it seems, than the BBC wanted. They are reeling. This is an omni-shambles, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I've come into the middle, like a good TV reporter, in the middle of this story.
Well,
not having a clue what's going on, but something has gone on.
Yeah.
Well, Bashir appears to have forged several documents in order to convince Princess Diana to do an interview, which turned out to be a pretty pivotal moment in the history, modern history of the royal family. And imagine, I was saying to Kevin earlier, imagine if this had been done by a tabloid newspaper, where you'd gone, look what they've done. They've made up documents.
Oh, yeah.
They've actually forged things, which is technically, actually not technically, is illegal, it's, right?
And that's exactly the point I was making earlier on. We had, as journalists, we had the whole Leveson inquiry when most people had done absolutely nothing wrong. We were on trial for doing our jobs. And the BBC forged documents. I mean, blatant criminal offences they were doing. And the
BBC were the most vengeful about that.
Yes, exactly. Yes. The way they covered the Leveson. Yeah. Yeah. And, the fact that Martin has now left the BBC through health reasons.
A month ago. Yeah.
The timing.
But a month ago, apparently. Well, why didn't they tell us?
Well,
this is quite an important story. Why are they being so secretive about this? Why isn't Panorama on tonight? Why are the BBC quaking in their boots about Dyson's report? Because it's going to make them look very, very bad. It's the worst scandal they've had since Jimmy Savile, possibly worse.
But Kevin, what will happen? Absolutely nothing will happen.
It will put their license fee future on the rack, to say the least.
Well,
you'll get a whole new layer of bureaucracy out of it.
Yes,
which is
I mean, is the BBC capable of doing anything right, do you think, Ali?
Apparently not. I'll answer that one for you.
Ooh, that's a tricky one.
Well, maybe you could ask the question a different way. What was the last thing they got right? How about the pursuit of love? People seem to be liking that.
How very middle market of them.
Well, listen, yes. Why don't we cook up another story?
It's posh nincompoop.
It's posh. Well, it's posh sex. It's just an excuse for people to have lots of romping about.
Posh people in 30s clothes at lovely English country houses.
A bit of fantastic. Bit of fascism thrown in as well.
It's a bit
what
racist.
A clever parody of Jacob Rees-Mogg that was there.
It's racist.
They're very pleased with themselves.
Yeah, well, I mean, the trouble is this is what they do. They spend an awful lot of money, which they're given by the good people of this country, on an awful lot of drama, which then they declare to be a success because all the people who paid for it started watching it in quite small numbers. It's an interesting model, isn't it? If you came up to some media organisation and said, here's the model for the way we should run this media organisation, people would go, sorry?
A couple of very obvious things wrong with it is, one, Dominic West had an affair with the girl who plays his daughter.
Yes.
Two,
hashtag orcs.
Two, and this is a killer for any British audience, one of the characters is called Fanny.
Yeah.
No getting around that.
It's a lovely name. I like that name. Why did it die out, Fanny? It's a great name.
Well, I can't imagine why it would have died out.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the home of common sense. We are in the pub, as you would expect us to be, because today's the day that the pubs are opening up, so you can go inside, have some lunch, have a couple of drinks, enjoy yourself, meet somebody you haven't seen for a while, maybe even give them a hug, if you fancy it. It's entirely up to you, and of course them, because consent's very important. Is it not, Kevin?
It's very, very important. And follow the government guidance when it comes to hugging. Don't break the rules on that one. Sideways.
Susanna Reid, Kevin reliably informs me, apparently said today that you're allowed to hug people, but personally for her today, she's not going to.
No, she said,
Ali Ross
I'm
is here, Dawn Neeson is here. Why? I mean, what is wrong with these people? Why?
Can I just say, in Susanna's defence, she never hugs people. She never has done. She doesn't like hugging.
But why does she not just say that?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't there. But, I mean, I was listening to you two, obviously. Brilliant, by the way. But, no, she doesn't like hugging. And lots of people don't like hugging.
The good thing about Susanna Reid, though, is
lots of people don't like hugging.
Well, I don't.
Don't you?
I hate hugging.
Well, that's because nobody's ever hugged you.
I'm not a tactile person.
That's not. It's so not like Kevin to be that grumpy, is it? I mean, talking about hugging.
Well, you can
for
hug
God's
people
sake.
Again.
I'm sitting here with sort of three misanthropes: the bloke who doesn't drink, the woman who defends Susanna Reid, and the bloke who doesn't like hugging.
But
how did this end up happening? We're in a pub, for heaven's sake. Supposed to be enjoying yourself.
To be fair to Susanna Reid, a lot of people thought that GMB would suffer when Piers Morgan left, but she's managed to keep the ship sailing, hasn't she?
Yeah. Also, genius idea to get Alistair Campbell as a co-host. Who managed to kill off the Queen.
Yeah, huggably appalling.
Really?
Yeah. That's a guy who spent 3 decades advising people how to behave on television.
Yes.
Right, on you go.
Yep.
And you'll get this reference. It was like watching Jack Douglas.
Yeah.
The old
yeah. Yeah.
He just keep going off on one.
Yeah, and he kept looking the
wrong
way.
Fiddling in his pockets. Yeah. And,
well, Ali said that he looked like a shoplifter who had just seen the police walk in.
And then they thought, you know, this is going so badly. Here's how to improve things. We'll get Tony Blair on. So, Alistair, do you remember him? The most unpopular prime minister in the history of prime ministers. And so you've got Alistair Campbell, Tony Blair, Susanna Reid. I mean, I'm sorry, I guarantee nobody watched that.
Oh, but they gave her him a hard time.
Oh, yeah.
Put him on the rack.
He barely recovered. Iraq.
Quivering wreck by the time. Yeah. But
Campbell kept sort of, Susanna Reid would say, think about Boris. He'd go, don't call him Boris, call him Johnson.
Yeah.
You know, he was just such sort of this mad Labour loony.
Yes, yeah.
Shouting politics. Yeah.
I don't think you're allowed to call him that. Because it was Mental Health Awareness Week.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yes,
sorry,
absolutely.
Sorry. I mean, in terms of his affiliation to the Labour.
Of course.
In the very next breath, he then referred to Margaret Thatcher as Maggie, rather than Mrs. Thatcher.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So Keir Starmer's Keir, Tony Gordon.
Yeah.
Johnson.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't call him Boris.
It's not like he's got any kind of problem with that. But I mean, it's a very odd thing that they're doing at GMB, broadly, isn't it? Because Kevin tells me they've lost 79-80% of their market, their audience, since Piers left. They haven't found a way of replacing him. It's obviously not going to be the weatherman. What are they going to do? What are they going to do? It's pretty dire.
He's irreplaceable. That is it. I don't like to admit that because I've had my run-ins with him in the past.
Yes.
He's the first person that's ever taken breakfast television and turned it into something different.
That you actually
something
want to watch.
Watchable.
Yeah.
You had to watch it. It was compulsive viewing, to be fair.
You never knew where he was going to take it. The rest of the time, I tuned in this morning and Adil Ray was there and it was worthy.
Disappointing.
Worthy as hell.
Yeah.
So who would be the best person then, Ali?
Definitely Alex Beresford, the woke weatherman. Him.
For the same reasons that Piers did, I would stick Richard Madeley in, just because you don't know what the hell he's going to say.
Right.
Well, he's coming in through the summer. I bet he gets the gig permanently.
Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, because he is that off the wall. You don't know where he's going. You don't know what he's going to say. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. It'd be fun.
He's also rather good at it, actually, I think.
Yes, you know? Absolutely. I mean,
he is a great broadcaster. He disguises it pretty well at times.
Yeah, but you see, it's quite difficult to look as if you don't know what you're doing when you actually do know what you're doing. I think that's actually harder to do than pretending you know what you're doing.
I rest my case.
I rest my case
over
here. You know. But it's true. You know, I mean, if it was me, I'd just shut it down. I wouldn't bother. I'd just go, you know what? You're going to have to invent something else to put in here. I would move Holly and what's-his-face down. Put them in to breakfast. Mm-hmm. Holly and Phil, there you go. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Actually, talking about really programmes that you will not want to watch, the worst ever edition of Piers Morgan's Life Story coming up.
Oh.
It's going to be Keir Starmer.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
They should have Keir Starmer in one chair and a plank of wood in another chair and see which one's more interesting.
The plank will be more interesting.
So, Keir, have you got a life story? No.
That's what Gordon Brown did when he could go no lower. So what the hell am I going to do? Hello, Piers.
You know your life's over when you're on Life Stories.
Seriously, though, it does look as though... So Piers's relationship with ITV is obviously still a good one.
Well, he never lost that job.
Right.
There was one aspect of his contract was GMB.
Right.
He's still going to make those Women Who Kill documentaries, and he's still going
to
carry on
with... But that's not an ITV thing, is it?
Does he not do that with Netflix or something?
No,
it's ITV.
Okay.
But I think that Life Stories, the last series, it kind of looked like it was running out of decent celebrities, didn't it? I mean, Chris Eubank, no thanks.
Gemma Collins.
Gemma Collins was a bit of a shocker.
The first series as well.
Yeah. Burt Reynolds was good.
There were great
moments.
Do you know, I once doorstepped Burt Reynolds from a boat.
Yeah,
In Florida. Yeah, it was one of the greatest jobs I ever had.
Him.
Well, he lived in this place called Jupiter, Florida, right? Yeah. But the road up to his house was so long that you couldn't sit outside it because there was a major road going past. You couldn't stop there. So we figured the only way we could actually look into where he was from the intracoastal, which is the kind of canal between, you know, the road and the sea.
Yes.
So we hired this guy with a boat and we sat outside the back of his house.
A few drinks.
Yeah, a bit of fishing.
But
we were there. We were there for...
I think I've got a marlin.
We were there for a week, right? We were there for a week.
A week and
four. And he had his boat, the Lady Gambler was there. He wasn't even there. We never saw him.
The best doorstep.
Yeah, but he'd been missing for about 6 months. People thought that he was ill. People thought he might be dead. We weren't able to enlighten them. All we kept saying was, no, we haven't seen him yet. And send more money.
I had to do that with Roger Moore once.
Really?
So he finally turned up after about a week and said, who the hell are you?
And that was it.
And I went, oh, Mr. Bond, I've been expecting you. And you know what? He said, F off.
Yeah. I've had a lot of those, yeah. Funnily enough. People wonder why we're so impervious to insults. We've had them in person. Anyway, guys, listen, thank you very much. We've come to the end of another pub show.
Amazing.
Which
amazing.
Doesn't mean we have to leave, by the way.
Yeah, I'm not going
now
to.
Now the serious drinking can begin. Dawn Neeson, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
You'll be back to this afternoon, this evening then.
Yes, this evening with Mark Dolan. Yep.
Ali Column now on Fridays. Yep. So you've got until then to recover from the old, hangover.
I can do it.
I think you can. You have my full confidence. Kevin, thank you very much indeed.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Mate.
Thank you to everyone for watching.
Talk Radio. Across the UK. Online. On DAB. And on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. On Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.